Well, hello again, George Holford, your host for our segment of Local Matters, where we talk about the who in our community, in our region, in our state, but primarily in our community and region, who contribute to the tapestry of our community. We've got great people doing great things and living and contributing, and we've got one today, another one. A true hero and a true leader in the respiratory business, which is huge. Gene Gant. Gene is, we're going to let him tell his story here in just a second, but amazing. But again, Local Matters is our opportunity each week to tell, in this segment, stories about the who. And Gene, welcome, and we're going to listen to you tell your story this
morning. All right.
Morning.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate that. And that's a lot of words you said about me. I don't know if I can live up to it.
Well, they're good. Just like your wife wrote them for me. No, I'm kidding. Let's talk about it's important to all of us, the respiratory end of the business. Let's talk. And we're going to do something. I told you off air, we're going to do the Billy Graham thing and talk and the major religion. Who are you? Where did you come from? How'd you get started? Start at birth. Go through your formative years. You can talk whatever. I mean, it's your show.
Right.
It's your story. So I'm going to do a hard thing for me. I'm going to listen.
All right. Well, I was born at a very young age to start with. I was born in North Carolina. I grew up in a small town, Lincolnton, North Carolina.
Sure.
And when I was about 6 years old, my grandfather was ailing and dying, and he called me over to the bedside and it said, "What are you going to do when you grow up?" I said, "I don't know."
Wow.
And he said, "You should go over the mountains to Tennessee and make some yourself." And I said,
"Really?"
Yep.
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay, I'll do that," because he loved coming to Tennessee from North Carolina, coming over the mountains.
Oh, sure.
So people would call me over and say, "Hey, Gene, tell them what you're going to do when you grow up." And I'd say, "I'm going to Tennessee to make something myself." They'd always ask me what I was going to do, and I'd say, "I don't know. I'm
not
six.
Yet, but I'm going to do it." Yeah.
I'll find out when I get there. So I had told that story many, many times. And, of course, growing up, I got very lucky and went to work in a small hospital in North Carolina that was owned by a doctor.
Okay.
And that particular doctor was in a wheelchair and had polio.
Wow.
And I was an orderly there at the hospital, and my job every day was, part of my job was to meet him in the parking lot at 5 o'clock and lift him into his Mercedes, which he drove directly across the street about 50 yards.
Wow.
And I would walk over there then and lift him out of the car. So it was always I had to walk. I never got to ride it, and I never ridden in a Mercedes at that point in my life. So one day I was there at work and again lifted him into his car, and he said, "Get in." And when he said, "Get in," I thought, "Boy, I've made it. You know, I've done something now, you know, riding a Mercedes." So anyway, this physician, he took me under his wing, and I escorted him around when he did his rounds, and we talked about polio, and he talked about the polio epidemic. And I had a lot of respect for him because he had gone to medical school in a wheelchair.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's a big deal. And he was about 80 years old at that point in time, and he was a pretty mean, gruff fella.
Oh, yeah.
Most people didn't like him, and he didn't like many people, but we got along
just fine. He liked you.
We got along just fine. So one day a piece of equipment came by, and I asked him what it was. It was a ventilator of sorts. Respiratory therapist was rolling it down the hall. I asked what it was, and he said, he told me what it was. And I said, "Someday I'd like to do that."
Really?
And the next day I went into work, and my time card had been moved from one time slot to the other. I was no longer orderly, but I'd been switched over to inhalation therapy, it was called at the time. So I started there when I was 16 years old. So by the time I graduated high school and went to respiratory therapy school, I already had several years under my belt and was pretty advanced in my knowledge base at a pretty young age, and got to mentor a lot of my co-students along the way. I ended up getting a job. My first big job was at the hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was picked to work in a cardiovascular unit that was a very sought-after position.
Mm-hmm.
And with that position, then I was able to really accelerate my career. But I always knew that I was going to be coming to Tennessee to make something myself. Yep.
That's a great thing. Yep. Y'all write a book.
And I hadn't talked to you just a few minutes. Yeah. That sounds great.
So I told that story so many times. One of the fellows that I was in school with, he had dropped out of school and had went to work for a company that contracted respiratory therapy departments mm-hmm. to hospitals.
Sure.
And he called me one day and he said, there's a brand new hospital being built in Livingston, Tennessee. And he
I was going to ask you how you got here.
There you go. So he said, you can go up there and be the director of respiratory therapy right out of school, and you'll be in Tennessee like you always wanted. So I said, good deal. So I came up a week before I graduated, had a look at Livingston, and it was much different than it is now.
Oh, yes, yes.
But I fell in love with the little town.
Great community.
And I thought that's where I was supposed to be. So I ended up moving here 2 weeks after I graduated. Had a Honda car, $50, and everything I owned, including my dog, in the Honda car. So that's how I ended up here. So I stayed at the hospital for several years. And then we ventured out into some other things. I convinced my brother to come up here. He was a respiratory therapist as well. He was 4 years behind me. But by that time, he said, no, I'm going to Florida. He said, I've found a job down there, and I'm
we don't have an ocean here.
That's only,
we got everything else, but we don't have an ocean.
So I said, well, come up and talk to me, and there's on the horizon is home oxygen and home care and things of that nature. And that was back in the – I moved here in 76, so that would be about 79 or so that I called him and said, you know, let's try it. So he came up and looked around. There was no ocean. And
that's right.
He said, I'll tell you what, I'll stay a year, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
So he came up, and, of course, I told him it never snowed, and when he got here, it snowed the biggest snow we ever had. And, he still had just married on his windows. I'll never forget, on the back of his car, was stuck in a ditch for a couple of days. But anyway, that 1 year lasted until 19... until 2002.
Yeah, sure.
So we went into business together. We built that business up from the garage, and about 1998, we were approached by a national company, and we sold that business.
So when I said earlier, you were truly, you and your brother, your family, were truly pioneers in the home respiratory business as we know it today.
Yeah, we were. Actually, we were in the days when you could write a claim to Medicare on a piece of paper and send it in. They would send you a check, you know.
But I'm thinking, as you were describing sleep apnea, which mm-hmm. I have, and home therapy. I mean, all this is these things didn't exist a long time ago. You were right there when you were a pioneer.
Right. Well, we felt like we were. There were a lot of nights that we spent, you know, sleepless because
we wondered what
we're going to do tomorrow. But a lot of the equipment was great, big and huge and bulky, and the technology has changed so much between then and now. Some of the oxygen equipment would take up an entire room
Now
it's a little bitty carrying case.
Yeah.
3 pounds you can put on your back.
See guys on commercials playing golf
That's
with a pack
right.
on their back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we sold that business. We took a couple of years and tried to decide what we wanted to do when we grew up. And a couple of years later, we got back into the business. But this time we focused on patients who required mechanical ventilation.
Okay.
Who had tracheostomies that were wanting to go home and live. And
wow.
Most of the companies that we had as competitors, they didn't want to take those patients because they were pretty complicated.
Yeah, that was the hard end of the business, exactly. I would imagine.
It was. And it turned out to be a blessing because every one of those competitors, every time they got a call about one of those, they'd call us.
You were a referral.
Right.
They referred.
So they were actually giving us the business. So we grew that, and again, we were focused on mechanical ventilation, and that was our specialty, and we were really good at it. Then we decided in about 2000 that we would open a ventilator unit in the walls of a skilled nursing facility, nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And we found a facility that had empty beds in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Sure.
And our idea was that we would use that facility to train families and to train patients so they could go home easier and it would be, they'd be more knowledgeable when they got there.
Mm-hmm.
And we could do it slower and take our time and do a better job and prevent them from going back to the hospital. So we opened that up thinking that we would get all of the patients.
Mm-hmm.
But after we put our staff in there and put our equipment in there, lo and behold, our people would call and say, hey, Mrs. Jones is not on the ventilator anymore. She's going to go home without it. So we learned a whole new area of business.
Wow. Experience is a hard teacher, but it does teach. Nothing like seeing it, feeling it, being, doing it, right?
That's right. That's right.
Wow. So now we're getting ready to, that first segment just flew by. We're getting ready to take a little break here, and when we come back, we're going to pick up where we left off and let's go on with your journey and your family's journey, and we're going to go over the mountain some more.
Sounds good.
Gene Gant, guest on Local Matters, back soon. Well, we're back. Gene Gant. Gene is a pioneer in the respiratory field, has already told some stories, and I've learned a lot, and we're going to learn a lot more, Gene, in the next few minutes, and the next two this segment and another. So let's pick up where we left off in the first segment and talk about your journey. And we've talked about a little bit. Let's pick up right there.
All right, sure. So we opened this first ventilator unit I was telling you about mm-hmm. in Chattanooga, and thinking that we were going to take home a lot of patients after that on the ventilator. But our staff was so good that they were weaning people from the ventilator.
Okay.
So all of these patients that we were thinking were going to go home on the ventilator were going home off the ventilator. And so it was pretty good because most people didn't think once you went to a nursing home on a ventilator that you'd ever come off.
Yes, that was probably the...
That was your last stop.
That was the end.
Yep. So we were able to show over a period of a year and a half that we got over 65% of those patients off of the ventilator and home. And that year, Governor Bredesen was elected.
Yeah, yeah.
He had experience in health care, and we got audience with him to show him what we were doing. And he supported us in a big way. And
he's an entrepreneur. I mean,
he was, yeah, for sure. Yeah. He actually came to visit our unit at one point in time. So he introduced us to the Bureau of Tin Care. We made a good impression there. And we continued that for several years until 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And we had written several articles that had been published and got a lot of notoriety about our work here in Tennessee. And I got a call from a fellow that had a real thick French accent one day. And he introduced himself and said he was with a global company based in Germany and that they were interested in buying our intellectual properties.
Sure, sure.
And I thought my brother was playing a trick on me. So I told him, I don't have any intellectual properties, but I'll sell you 5 acres of the farm if you want it. And that's when I learned that he didn't have any sense of humor. He didn't know what I was talking about.
He was for real.
He was for real. So we were acquired by a global company.
Mm-hmm.
For the next 5 years, I traveled around all over Europe, South America, and convinced these countries to start paying for a system like we had here with this long-term ventilation. In 2011, we won the Center of Excellence Award from the American College of Chest Physicians. Mm-hmm. Got a good recognition there. All the while, my brother was, during that acquisition, he was put in charge of national sales for this company. And I would call him from time to time from Barcelona, from Spain, somewhere. And he would usually tell me, I'm in Waterloo, Iowa. Don't talk to me.
You really went over the mountain, didn't you? I go back to that statement. For North Carolina, boy, that's what we used to call high cotton.
You were
in high cotton.
That's for sure. That's for sure. So we stayed with that company for a period of about 5 years, and then we had the opportunity to join up with the Bureau of Teen Care and to create the first in the nation pay-for-performance model for long-term ventilation.
Great.
Which we did, and today we still oversee that model statewide. I have a staff of about 60 respiratory therapists across the state.
Wow.
We see each and every one of those patients on a weekly basis. If they're at home, we see them regularly on a monthly basis. And we've been able to maintain that good track record, a good success rate of getting them off the ventilator. So with that, we also are now doing the same thing up in Chicago. We were asked to come up there, and it was really funny because as I got to Chicago, I couldn't help but think, you know, the hillbillies were going to Chicago to show them how to do things, you know.
So that's not unusual. Tennessee and North Carolina folks went to Chicago for jobs in the automobile industry. So this is the modern wave.
So we're still doing that up there in Chicago. We're getting ready to go into Pennsylvania and several other states as well and expand what we're doing. But that's, you know, that's the business end of what we do. Along the way, my brother and I started collecting equipment, old equipment.
Woo, okay.
And that's how we ended up with the iron lungs. Today, we have 5 iron lungs. We're sort of addicted to them. I don't know why.
Sure.
But we have a couple in our showroom there in Livingston, and they actually work. And we have a lot of engineers that are working on new types of ventilation that'll come to get
in. So you're on the cutting edge, still working in this field.
Still working in the field, yep. So they'll come and get in them so they can feel what it feels like. And it's quite a different feeling. In addition to that, we've got several other items that we have now. We're formulating a museum. And a couple weeks ago, I was called by a fellow up in New York that's been collecting since 1968.
Oh, man.
And he told me about his extensive collection that he had in storage. And he said, I'd like for you to have it. And I said, well, how much do you want for that? Because I thought it's going to be a big ticket item. He said, no, you don't understand. I want for you to have it. I want you to come and get it.
You mean literally come get it.
So we are getting ready to go there to New York to pick up that treasure, and we will have one of every type of ventilator product ever made from the iron lung.
Right here in Tennessee?
Right here
in Livingston, Upper Cumberland.
Oh, you'd be surprised the number of tourists that stop at window and read about the iron lung. And if we're there, of course, we'll bring them in and let them see it, touch it, hear it work, that kind of thing.
That is fascinating.
Kids. Yeah.
And you've got it, and we've got it right here in this region.
Right here, yep. And a lot of homeschool kids, a lot of grade school kids from the school system, when they study polio, they'll come over and they get a firsthand look at it. So not just reading from a book.
You know, one thing that jumped out at me a while ago was some things in life hopefully don't change. You had someone in your life as a child, as a kid, that made a difference.
Right.
And here you are today. That still happens today.
It does.
Keeping your head up and look around and follow your bliss and follow your dreams. And there's people there who along the way, God puts people in your path divinely to help.
Yep. And all it takes is one or two statements.
All it takes is once you go over the mountain.
Right.
I just love that.
Yeah.
And you had someone, you said the physician, the 80-year-old, he was pretty gruff, but he liked you. So
liked
relationships.
Exactly. Yeah. All of that's very important, and we thrive on that. We try to promote to young people, you know, those kind of sentiments. You know, let's try to figure out that one thing that'll make a difference
that's
in their
wonderful.
Life.
That's wonderful.
And I'm very, very happy that my son is a respiratory therapist. He has quite a name in the business. My daughter is a fantastic nurse practitioner.
So from this experience, this one guy in North Carolina, you've generated a business, a family, a calling for the next generation.
Correct. My daughter's a nurse practitioner with us, and she sees all of our patients as well, and we just have one big happy family. Everything's great with that.
George Alford back on Local Matters, and again, we're on it. All I can say is wow. We have a guest, Gene Gamp, who is a pioneer in the respiratory therapy, respiratory breathing business. Great story of how he got started, and we're going to pick up there. And as we were at the break, you know, I was thinking about it, technology has now allowed people like yourselves with big dreams and big ideas and skills to do world-class things.
Right.
To live in a Livingston, Tennessee, or a Cookeville, or used to you had to be in the big cities when we were growing up to do things.
Right.
So let's just pick up and let's just keep telling your story. Love
right.
what you're doing.
All right. Well, I appreciate that opportunity to tell it. Maybe that'll help me write that book someday.
You got a book.
The technology has changed tremendously from the days of the iron lung. Now ventilators are down to about 5 pounds. They're very portable. They're battery operated.
Yeah. Of course, I'm talking about how you can live and market and work online. And where it's used to, you had to physically be in places, but you also had the tech. We were talking about off air before we started.
Right.
People play golf today with the same thing on their back.
Exactly. Yeah.
It used to, they were in an iron lung.
Right.
So,
exactly.
I mean, just in years, I mean.
Well, in addition to what we do with the business end of things and what we've always had a passion about, taking care of people.
Yes.
And getting other people involved in the profession, that type of thing, we recruit a lot of people, and we go out and talk to schools, yeah. things of that nature.
Well, you have a ministry. You have a passion. You have a reason to do in your family. So
yeah, that's true.
That's the highest calling. I just think serving and helping others.
Yeah, it truly is. We firmly believe in that. We also are very active in our community. My brother finally did make that trip down to Florida. he did buy a house down there.
Well, you delayed him for a while.
I delayed him for a good while.
Long time.
30 years. He's been the best partner. People ask how long we've been working together. I said for 64 years.
But you let him come back up here, don't you?
Yeah,
you
right.
You see him once.
He's still here about every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And he's still working with me.
We
have a Florida office.
You just let him take a little vacation.
That's right.
Not a vacation, but a change of scenery.
That's right.
Every couple of weeks.
So here at home in Livingston, I'm involved with the downtown square.
We love what y'all are doing.
I've been on that square. I bought my first building there in 1982.
Okay.
So I've been on that square in my entire adult life while I've been here. And during the time that in the early 80s, the economy was bad, and a lot of the folks that were retiring came to us and saw what we were doing and encouraged us. We bought several other properties as a result of that. They would come to us and say, "We want you to take this building and do what you
do." So you were involved heavily in the rebirth of our central business district in Livingston, the square.
Yes. We did quite a bit.
No, that's great. Glad to get to know you. Yeah.
So nowadays I chair the Downtown Redevelopment Commission, which has recently changed names to the Main Street Historic District Commission, and we have a program that we get a rebate from the state on tax revenues that are produced inside the city. We've been able to reinvest
Put that into that.
Exactly. We reinvest it back into to grants for buildings, for concerts. You mentioned our concerts a while ago. This year we've got just such a lineup coming, and I don't know if you've there's some of the local talent that is now national talent.
Oh, yeah, we're a music, arts, music incubator in this region for the country. I mean, we're bigger
amazing.
Because that's what we just do as natives or local folks. We just play the guitar and play the mandolin, sing and do stuff, whereas that's special. And it's what people do here.
It is. We've produced a lot of great talent, and most particularly one of the folks that's going to be at the concert. I'll go through them here in a minute.
But yeah, loved it.
One of the individuals by the name of Baker Blankenship.
Okay.
Baker did not play guitar until COVID came along. He went and bought him a guitar and taught himself to play. And he worked in our restaurant we owned up there, back in the kitchen and taking orders. And from time to time, we would hear somebody in the back singing, and I'd say, "Who's that?" And they'd say, "Oh, that's Baker. He sings all the time."
Oh, man.
So last June, we had Baker on stage at Pioneer Day, and he was playing some local venues around town, and we got him on stage at Pioneer Day. Then he wrote a couple songs that got 2-3 million downloads. And it was so much that he got an agent, and we went to him at the restaurant. He said to me, "I'm never going to leave my job here because y'all been so good."
Of course.
So we kind of encouraged him to follow his dream. Over the last couple of months, he was on tour in Europe. He's opened for Willie Nelson.
Oh, man.
He has hit the big time in less than 1 year. It's just amazing. But we have him coming to do a big concert for us at home.
Oh, man.
So that's a big, important thing for us. But I'll tell you about our concerts real quick so I don't run out of time.
No, let's do it.
Talking about that. But we have May 31st, we have the World Turning Band coming, and that's a Fleetwood Mac tribute band.
Okay.
Big favorite of everybody's. And then we also have The Bridges, which is an Eagles band.
Man.
So that's
you're talking my generation.
My generation, too.
All right, man. That's great.
That's on May 31st. June 6th and 7th, we have Pioneer Days. We have a big lineup for 2 days of country music and then bluegrass music, and have some up-and-coming stars appearing there for us at Pioneer Days. Then August 2nd, we have the Garrett Boys, which is another local favorite that is from the Livingston area that have done a fantastic job and have gotten great notoriety, play all over the place. And then Baker Blankenship will be with them. Again, that's August the 2nd. And August 9th is our Summerfest event there at Central Park. And we have a group called Four on the Floor, which is a local favorite. And then we have the fabulous Jake Coote Band.
Oh, sure.
Well.
Yeah. The Voice. I mean, the winner of The Voice.
Right.
Right here in our region.
That's right. And that will have the August 9th event will have craft beers there, wineries will be there displaying their products.
That's
there.
Great.
Those two events, August 2nd and August 9th, are ticketed events. Tickets are $30.
Wow, that's a bargain for what you're...
It really is.
For the quality and the numbers of entertainment, that's a buy.
Yeah, we feel like it is. You can get those online. And then, of course, our Central Park is just such a gem.
It is.
It's the very best thing in my years on the square that we've ever done.
There for the dedication, you know, in the chamber. Is there anything that Livingston, our region, could have done any better and have more impact on so many lives than that new facility and school kid? You could start naming things, what it serves.
Every day I go past it, I go down passed there just to see everybody and the numbers of people enjoying that splash park and all that. Of course, we were blessed with great restaurants there in Livingston.
Yes,
several great restaurants. We've got more on the way. We have.
You're seeing the rebirth of a major industry, tourism, visitors. It's always been here, but what y'all are doing and we're doing as a region is just phenomenal.
It really is. Yeah. The only thing that I laugh about a lot is that Livingston, when in its earliest days, as a small pioneer town, everything changed when the railroad came.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a line that came, the Overton County Railroad, that came from there to here, connected up with the Tennessee Central Railroad. And that changed everything. The brick buildings that we're in today got built in those.
It's an era. It was a time.
So the only thing that could be better for us is to have a train come back.
Yes.
We would love that.
Well, think big. Dream big dreams.
Right.
That is great stuff. You know, I told you I wasn't going to talk, and I tried, but
you
hit so many nerves. When we first put together this regional approach to economic development, we called the Highlands. Four counties. It was three, Livingston, White County. But we hired an internationally known site consultant that worked with the one-third of the Fortune 500 companies. Spent about, hard to believe that, this is 10, 15 years, spent about $40,000. That's a lot of money in this part of the country to do studies. And they came back and they did a study. They said, basically, sit down, we're going to tell you. And what they basically said was, we thought they'd say plastics or microbe, whatever. We thought they would talk traditional. They said, you have world-class arts, music, and crafts.
Right.
Said, you don't, and I'm going to cut it way down, but you don't know, but you're already a miniature Asheville, North Carolina West, and if you'll learn to better market that, and you can do that. And we're seeing that.
Absolutely.
Now, not everybody wants to be Asheville, but we have all the ingredients for tourism, visitors, and quality of life. And people come here and do it and leave, go home. We don't have to educate their kids.
That's exactly right. Well, I was told just lately that we are the Franklin of the Upper Cumberland.
Yes.
So, well, I said, okay, I'll take that.
You might go over the mountain. You've got two good things for
we
you.
We also have our new arts council, I'll mention. We have a plein air arts festival in October. Again, this October, artists from all over the state come, and it's just a fantastic event.
So you're living the dream.
Talking about in
our region. So.
Yes, sir.
Well, God bless you, Gene. This is wonderful stuff, what you are doing, and great. We're out of time is what the problem is. George Alford, pioneer in Livingston, Tennessee, in the world, and respiratory and tourist, Gene Gant.